Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you doing? We're all well here. And if you're following me on Insta, you'll know that sleeping has been a bit of a big topic for the last couple of weeks. It's a bit of a mixed bag, I'll be honest. The evenings, we seem to have got bedtime sorted, you know, don't want to speak too soon. But I seem to now know when is the optimum time to put Ren down and I can walk out of the room, which is fantastic. It just makes the evening so much less stressful. She's not sleeping through, but you know what? I'm kind of okay with that. I feel like I'm on the countdown with breastfeeding. I know I've still got a few months to go, but I love every minute of that. And it is only one or two wake ups a night, so that I can handle without worrying about it. The day naps, however, are all over the shop. And that's really frustrating because I did feel like we were just getting into a bit of a groove. I suspect, and quite a few of you agreed when I did a poll over on Instagram, that starting nursery has thrown a bit of a spanner in the works, because whereas her days used to be quite uniform, now they are different almost every day. But anyway, we'll get there. I've also been beavering away in the kitchen, creating lots of snacks. And I don't mind telling you that today I gave her an Ella's Kitchen and she didn't like it. And so she prefers Mummy's Kitchen, which makes me feel very good. I'm sure that she will grow to love Ella's Kitchen. But yeah, no, I think it was just, it had more spices in than she's used to. I haven't quite introduced all the spices yet. So I think it was just a bit new for her, but it will come. Her current favourites are banana pancakes and also strawberries. She loves strawberries. She's also partial to a bit of mango. She's using her two little bottom teeth to bite off chunks, which is fabulous, but it also means that my heart is in my mouth because I'm just thinking, swallow it, swallow it, swallow it, swallow it. So yeah, that's, it is quite nerve-wracking, but it's really good. It is good. In other news, The Secret is now out. I'm officially creating a safe space for people who are finally pregnant. I just, like this podcast, once I got the idea in my head, I simply couldn't not do it. So the plan is for it to go live in the next couple of weeks. I have got a date in mind, but until I'm confident that I've got everything set up, I don't want to confirm it. Fingers crossed, I will do that really soon. Keep an eye out on my Instagram at Trying Years, because that's probably where I will share it first. The space will be a private group on Facebook, and I know Facebook can be a bit of a difficult one, but it's just the platform that offers the right, you know, group kind of situation. So that is where it's going to be for the time being, at least. It's going to be a space where you can share, ask questions, worry, and even complain about being pregnant, because it can be really tough. But overall, it's going to be a place where we can all support each other. So whether you've been through fertility treatment, if you've sadly suffered any kind of loss, and that could be recurrent miscarriage, stillbirth, neonatal death, termination for medical reasons, you know, whatever that loss is, it's going to be affecting your pregnancy, and you are welcome in that space. You might be physically pregnant yourself or via surrogate. And I'm really excited to tell you that I have got, as well as an episode on surrogacy coming up in February, I'm also planning a bit of a special actually on surrogacy. So more on that once I've got all of those details confirmed. You may, like me, have lost one of your twins during your pregnancy. Whatever your experience, if you are part of this incredible fertility community that exists today and you are finally pregnant, this will be the space for you. There will be a small monthly fee, but once you're in, as well as the above, you'll also have access to a monthly live with me and sometimes a wonderful guest. Plus, there will be a monthly online support group via Zoom. And that's something I'm really excited about, because I know that's something that doesn't exist anywhere really at this point. So It will be a video call, so you can put your video on or not. It's entirely up to you. But it means that we can really connect with each other. You get an opportunity to talk as well, not just, you know, my lives are good, so people say, and people enjoy them and get lots from them. But I'm very conscious that I'm the only person who can be seen and I'm the only person who can really talk. So I'm really excited about doing these video calls because it will give you guys the opportunity to talk about your experiences and talk to each other. So that is something I'm really, really excited about in particular. It's all going to be new. You know, I have these plans in my head and lots more, but I will really value your input. So if you have any ideas about what you would like to see, please, please do drop me a line at kat@katstrawbridge.com. And all the links that I mention, you know, my Instagram, my email address, details about my guest today, all of that will be in the show notes. And for those of you that aren't there just yet, I can't wait for you to be finally pregnant and then to be able to welcome you into that space really, really, really soon. So on to this week's episode, where I'm chatting all things pelvic floor with pelvic floor physio Helen Keeble. As well as this episode being packed full of information, honestly, every time I've listened to our chat, I've been re-motivated about my pelvic floor exercises. I'm really excited to tell you that I've got a giveaway for you, which is kind of my first, well, certainly the podcast's first one. The wonderful people at LV very kindly gifted me one of their pelvic floor trainers, and I really love it. From the packaging, and I kid you not when I say opening this little beauty is like opening a piece of jewellery. Like, they've really thought of everything. Even using it, it's just such a cool piece of kit. And whilst it isn't necessary that you have one in order to do your pelvic floor exercises, so that's no excuse, if you're like me and need a little nudge, and, you know, it does turn it into a bit of a game and you want to beat your previous highest score, then this is the thing for you. So how do you win? All you need to do is head over to my Instagram at Trying Years, like the post for today's episode, and tag two friends in the comments. Then make sure you're following me and also LV. And for an extra entry, you can share the post in your stories, but make sure you tag me there so that I can see it. Right, I think that's it for now. Although there is just one thing. We mention an episiotomy in our chat, and I remember not knowing what this was, so I had to ask someone. So even though I know that some of you will know what it is, and others might become all too familiar with this word very soon, for those of you who don't yet know what it is, it's where the surgeon cuts your vagina to make it the space wider for your baby to come out. Don't worry, I remember wincing about it, oof, but it was all fine, all totally fine. Other than all of that, can I just ask you or remind you to subscribe, rate and review this podcast wherever you listen. And that's it. So here's the interview. Have a wonderful week and I will speak to you soon. Bye bye. Hi there, Helen. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate you calling in from Dublin, which is where you are right now. That's right, isn't it?
It is indeed. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's super. Like, the pelvic floor is something that I've kind of been aware of throughout my life, but never really paid much attention. And then since, to be honest, it wasn't even necessarily when I was pregnant. It's been since I've had Ren that I've paid more attention to it. And I don't know if you saw, I did actually admit on one of my Insta stories that there had been a little bit of involuntary wind. Yes, like a little fart here or there, which did actually happen the other day in the bank. It was not good. I was in like an office with this woman. It was clearly me and it was very embarrassing. So, things like that have made me think I need to pay more attention, which is when I had, or someone had recommended actually, Pelvic Floor Patrol that you're part of. So we will talk about that. And then we started talking and you have come on to give us all the information that we need to know, which is incredible.
Absolutely.
So I guess if we start at the beginning, you know, what is the pelvic floor, if you would?
Absolutely. So the pelvic floor is basically the name for the group of muscles that sits in the pelvis. So they are predominantly internal muscles. So we have like most of the layer as an internal like hammock, and it wraps around all of our holes as well. So in that way, the hammockness of them keeps our organs supported. So the bladder, the uterus, and the bowels. And because the muscles attach to the bottom of the pelvic bones, they also offer some support for our pelvic joints as well. Okay. And then because they wrap around all of our holes, so our urethra, the vaginal opening, and the back passage, they are also really, really important at being able to keep those holes closed or open, depending what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then we also just have a smaller layer that is an external layer. And that one is important for those holes, but also really important for all of our sexual function.
Okay.
So to see the external layer, you'd have to be undressed from the waist down and just basically have a look up and underneath between your legs. And that's exactly where they are. So most of it is internal, but we do have that smaller layer externally too.
So you can actually see it?
You can see some of it. So basically the external layer is underneath your vulva.
Okay.
So like, for example, when I'm teaching ladies how to do it, and if I'm not with them face to face or, you know, having a chat or something, then one of the ways that I say to test if they're doing the right thing is to actually hold a mirror between their legs. And uh-huh. when they do a pelvic floor squeeze, if they're doing it correctly, you should be able to see your vulva moving up and in a little bit.
Okay.
And your holes tightening, basically.
Yeah.
So obviously not a foolproof method of how to test it or anything like that, but it's just a really good start in order to know if you're on the right track at least.
Yeah. I wonder how many people listening are like clenching their pelvic, because I am, and I'm thinking, yeah, how kind of near the edge is that kind of thing? And yeah, okay. Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. That you could essentially, you can almost test it, like you say, not thoroughly, but you can get an idea about whether you're doing the right thing just by kind of looking there. Gosh, I did not know that. I had, as it happened, just happened to turn out that I had my appointment with a women's physio yesterday, and she mm-hmm. tested it. And I suppose that you would do this if you were face to face with someone. She did kind of have her hand up me, kind of testing it and checking for other bits and pieces as well. So, but yeah, but you can, worst case scenario, check it yourself.
Yeah, well, you can basically check if you're squeezing in the right way, mm-hmm. because often if you've only got kind of verbal instructions to go by, then, you know, it's not always necessarily easy to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But actually, on that note, it's been shown recently with an ultrasound study that basically, if you do only have verbal instructions, the best way to get your pelvic floor to do the right thing is actually by squeezing the back passage as if you're trying to stop a fart.
Okay.
So, you know, we used to get taught that we should try and stop the flow of urine.
Mm.
But actually, that is outdated now.
Oh.
So if you're trying to do your pelvic floor squeezes and you want to do them correctly, then definitely focus your efforts on the back passage only.
Right.
And you should still get the same like tightening and lift sensation, but it should really be initiated from the back passage.
Right. Okay. And just, I'm going to kind of, this is a bit kind of out, not necessarily out of left field, given what we're talking about, but longer term. And this is like your urethra or your back passage, I guess. But this is going to stop incontinence kind of across the board, isn't it? Like, as long as your pelvic floor is, that there's a lot of things. It's not about pregnancy just now. This is like longer term into your old age as well, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like I often will get lost thinking about, you know, if every single lady was taught how to do their pelvic floor exercises correctly. And I would see lots of women who have never had babies before as well with pelvic floor problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if every single person had at least just one check and was confident that they're doing the right thing, then it really could just prevent so many problems in the future, like leaking or prolapse or like any sexual difficulties and things like that. So, it could save the world.
Certainly save us when we get into the old people's home anyway.
Well, do you know, and actually on that note, it's incontinence is the second most leading cause of a nursing home admission.
Really? So right.
It's only after mental health. So gosh, if we were all doing a few more squeezes every day, we might get out of that nursing home.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Right, okay, well, that's another reason to get on it. You mentioned their prolapse. Can you talk a bit more about that? So when I had my appointment yesterday, that's one of the things she was checking for. Can you, talk to us about that?
Yeah, of course. So a prolapse in this context is basically when one of the pelvic organs, so the bladder, the uterus, or the bowels, comes down a little bit further than what it should do.
Okay.
So all of our organs, if they're pelvic organs or abdominal organs, they all move up and down and left and right all around because that's part of how they function. They need movement to be able to have good circulation and to be working properly. So movement in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. But with the prolapse, it's when the downward movement is either more than what it normally is, or it stays down for longer than what it normally should. But basically, there's a lot of misinformation about prolapse, and doing pelvic floor exercises in the right way, and especially the long ones. So when we're doing squeezes, we should do short ones and long ones, but especially the long ones help prevent and treat a prolapse. So it absolutely needn't be all doom and gloom. And I see so many ladies who do have a prolapse, and some of them are really affected, some of them slightly less, but it's nearly always the case that they can get better with just simply doing pelvic floor squeezes.
So it is so effective, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean, you know, I guess one of my biggest bugbears is when people are, or when ladies are told to stop doing things when they have a prolapse. So I would say it probably mainly relates to exercise, just kind of general exercise. And actually, it's so important as women that we are exercising. So, you know, for so many benefits like our mental health, our sleep, our fitness, our bone health, so many reasons. But if you do have a prolapse, then it doesn't mean you can't exercise. It just means you need to tailor it in the meantime until you get stronger again, and then you can crack on with anything that you like.
Right. Okay. And on exercise, when, you know, like we can sit here and kind of do pelvic floor exercises on, as you know, as an isolated thing, and I do appreciate you know, if you're kind of looking at Pilates, or I can do it sometimes, I do it sometimes with swimming, that if you isolate a specific muscle group, you know, that that's going to be better for it. But is there any other form of exercise that helps work it? And I've in my head, so I love exercising, and I kind of do it in fits and starts, but the thing that I did most recently before I got pregnant was weights. And I'm thinking particularly of a leg press. So, you know, when your kind of feet are a kind of higher above you in a diagonal, and you're pushing up and down. And, you know, does that, do things like that, can that all help with your pelvic floor?
Definitely. So just being generally active can really help with your pelvic floor, because and that could apply to any type of exercise, because it just keeps you moving. Every time we're upright, because of gravity, the pelvic floor is constantly working a little bit anyway. So the pelvic floor is never quite actually at rest. And so the more that you're doing just general activity and movements, the better for your pelvic floor. It has been shown that we do have to do the isolated squeezes to get the pelvic floor strength to what you want it to be. And also there's some recent stuff coming out in the last year or two that actually doing impact exercise can be really beneficial for the pelvic floor. Because when we do impact, like just say like a jump, for example, then it's beginning to be shown that basically the pelvic floor muscles contract way more automatically than what we could ever contract them if we're doing isolated squeezes. So a bit of a ramble, but long story short, absolutely, like the perfect pelvic floor program would look like some isolated squeezes, some general exercise, and some impact exercise.
And I can imagine with impact exercise, like you say the word jump and you think, oh my God, wet myself. So, well, yeah. Hopefully you don't, but you could almost imagine that you would steer away from doing that kind of thing if you were worried about your pelvic floor. But what you're saying Definitely. Is actually that will help you. So maybe like load up the tenor ladies and or do it at home, but you shouldn't avoid it.
Well, this is it. And yeah, exactly. So you shouldn't avoid impact, but the crucial thing is doing the right thing at the right time that's appropriate to you. Because like I example would see, I would treat lots of CrossFitters. And so a lot of them would leak when they're doing their skipping. And, you know, it's not about, well, it might be temporarily stopping the skipping, but then you just scale down the impact. So if they leak when they skip, then well, I'll either get them to make sure they're breathing and to try and relax their tummy muscles because that can increase the leaking. But otherwise, I would scale them back down. So I might do like going up on their tiptoes and then falling hard from that position. So they're like landing on their heels, or I might get them to do some stomping. They might have their homework might be 2 minutes of stamping or stomping around or, you know, something that's basically giving them some impact. And then they can build up again from there.
And you're right. Like the information that we're talking about here is general. What we should recommend to people is to go and see a woman's physio like you. You can, like I checked it and I've said this on my Instagram. I spoke to the doctor about the pelvic floor and just in general, because people had said to me about a women's physio. And he had said to me, oh, you know, the waiting list is 12 months, you know, go away. And I've got an app, which I'll talk about, you know, to kind of remind me to do my pelvic floor. But he said, you know, just go away and kind of do what you're doing. And then I ended up at the doctor's again, like with a little one, you just end up at the doctor's quite frequently at the start. So it's ridiculous, but never have I been more. Second time I was like, do you know what, just put me on the waiting list, because I've heard that people are still suffering a year later, you know, and it's still not back to normal. And then I got my appointment within like 4 to 6 weeks, and I was able to, I had to move it a couple of times as well, but I still ended up going yesterday. You know, my daughter's only 4.5
Amazing.
Months old. So, you know, like push your doctor, just say, just put me on the list, and you never know, like how it'll come through. So, but failing that, you know, you can go to private women's physios as well. And it sounds like we should all be doing that.
Well, yeah, in an ideal world, every single lady should have like a check basically with a pelvic health physio. And to be fair, it does happen in lots of parts of the world where I don't know if it's just the maybe a lack of funding and resources and stuff over here, and also a lack of just acknowledgement and, well, loads of reasons to be fair. But ideally, if you can get a pelvic health physio, and they do exist on the NHS. I was in the NHS for 5 years before I went into private practice, but we are everywhere. We're all over the country and we're a private practice NHS. But if you can get to one, and as you say, even if it might be a bit of a wait, it will be well worth the wait. And it's never, ever too late to get checked. So even if you know, some of the ladies I see, their babies are now 16 or they're 34, you know, like they're just, it is actually never ever too late to get checked. And even if you just go, you know, if you're able to kind of even just pay for one appointment privately, if there's what, you know, for whatever reason, but even just a one-off check would be amazing, because you can just check that you're doing the right thing when you're squeezing your pelvic floor. You can get a baseline of where you're at and then a plan specifically tailored to you. So, you know, when I mention about short and long squeezes, then, you know, your physio will then be able to tell you exactly how many to do and what position to do them in, because that can affect them. And in an ideal world, we'd all have access.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So talking specifically about pregnancy, because the majority of the listeners for this podcast will be in their miracle pregnancies, which is amazing. You know, having been through that, and then I started thinking about the pelvic floor after I'd had Ren, is there anything that I could have been doing, should have been doing during my pregnancy that would, I don't know, and like, and tell me, would it benefit the pregnancy? Would it benefit the labour, the birth, and, you know, the kind of recovery afterwards? Yeah, talk to me about that if you would.
Definitely. Basically, during pregnancy, it's completely safe and really, really important to do pelvic floor squeezes. So during a pregnancy, especially as it progresses, obviously you gain a bit of weight. And a lot of that weight is really sitting on top of the pelvic floor. So it just means that in any pregnancy, our pelvic floor normally does get a bit weaker because of all this extra load and effort required of the muscle. So that's why it's really, really good and really crucial to do some squeezes every day. And it just helps to really stop the pelvic floor getting weaker and then help prevent any problems from arising, like prolapse or leaking and things like that. But just a quick mention, when you're doing squeezes, it is really important to do that tightening and lift, but it's also really, 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 really important to fully let go again after. And a little cheat way to do that, to make sure that you are fully letting go again, is just really simply to take a big breath in. Because our diaphragm, which is the main breathing muscle, and our pelvic floor are a bit like a puppet on a string. So whatever the diaphragm does, the pelvic floor will follow. So when we breathe in, our diaphragm lowers down, and that means our pelvic floor can lower down or relax. Uh-huh. And when we breathe out, the pelvic floor lifts a little bit. But we can predominantly use it to our advantage to make sure that we're fully letting go. So again, if you can't get to a physio, it's a really, really, really good tip that after every single squeeze, whether it's a long one or a short one, just do a big breath in before starting your next one. Because otherwise, if you're not fully letting go, or if you're kind of pulsing the pelvic floor really quickly, then you might begin to add tension to the pelvic floor. We don't want tension either. So we want, like all the muscles in our body, we want the pelvic floor to be strong but also flexible. And especially in preparation for delivery, if you're going to have a vaginal birth, then we want the pelvic floor to be really flexible as well as have that strength. So big breath in between every squeeze.
I'm sitting here trying to do, you know, kind of doing that, I guess, as I suspect other people will be too. So if, could you do that in time with your breathing? So what you're saying, it's almost like you said with the puppet, you're saying like pull it up. So mm-hmm. And I think when you do pregnancy yoga and things, it's a J breath, you know, and I'm almost doing that kind of thing, but the other way, I think. So if you breathe in, that's as you pull your pelvic floor up, and you're breathing out, aren't you? And then you're breathing in and letting it go.
So you could time it to do it the same time as your breath, in which case you would be breathing out to squeeze the pelvic floor and breathing in to let it go.
Yeah.
Or you could, which is the way that I would normally teach pelvic floor, you can keep them separately, because basically we're not constantly breathing in or out. We breathe in, we breathe out, then there's a couple of seconds pause before we breathe again.
Uh-huh.
So for the short ones, I would normally teach people to do the squeeze in that pause when we're not actually breathing in or out.
Okay.
So I'd get them to squeeze the pelvic floor, let go again, and then take a breath in, breathe out, squeeze the pelvic floor, let go again, breathe in, breathe out. Just to keep them separate, because we definitely can utilize the breath and we can pair them together. And especially in different classes like yoga and Pilates, they'll do a lot of work with the breath and the core and the pelvic floor. And that's all fab. You know, that's all really good for lots of different reasons. But if we're just looking at purely isolated pelvic floor function and strength, it's quite good to not get in the habit of only initiating on the out breath, for example, because our pelvic floor has to work whatever we're doing breath wise. So if you don't kind of attach it to one part of the breath, you can then use it for any part of the breath.
So maybe use that just to check that you're doing it right, almost like as a form thing, but then kind of a confident that you are, then that's, you kind of have them separate. And you mentioned there, it's great, honestly, you're talking and kind of making me think of the next things, vaginal birth. But just so anyone's listening, I do have a list of questions. Don't worry.
I have seen the list.
You have. Sometimes I make up as I go along. Sometimes, but hopefully not all the time. But you mentioned vaginal birth. Now, it's somewhat obvious that if you have a vaginal birth, then that baby is going straight through the pelvic floor. But if you have a cesarean, like the weight is still there during the pregnancy, does any of the birth kind of affect the pelvic floor in a cesarean situation?
Technically, the actual delivery of the cesarean doesn't affect the pelvic floor.
Mm-hmm.
So unless some of the ladies that I see sometimes would have an emergency C-section, so they might have tried some of the vaginal birth components and then had to be rushed to theatre. So if your pelvic floor, you know, if you've begun the kind of pushing stage or had any intervention, then your pelvic floor will be affected. But if you haven't got to that stage yet, or if you've had an elective C-section, then the actual delivery process won't affect your pelvic floor. Okay. But you're so right when you say about the actual pregnancy itself will still affect your pelvic floor. So even if you know that you're having a C-section, then it's still really, really crucial to do your pelvic floor exercises still. It's a bit of a myth that if you had a C-section, you don't have to worry about your pelvic floor, because of course it's still been subjected to the stresses and strain of pregnancy.
So you said there about any intervention. So I had a kiwi cut for Ren. We were in that situation where Ren was, I had to be rushed to theatre right at the end of my birth. What they'd said was she was in the wrong position, so they needed to turn her to get her out vaginally, but she was too low down for a C-section, but we were going to have to do that. And so I think I know people that this happened to. So I guess by that point, she had already gone through some of the pelvic floor. And I think that they need to kind of push the baby back up, don't they, in order to kind of have a cesarean. Fortunately, that didn't happen for us. And, you know, people that I know that's happened to have had very healthy babies and everything. But intervention. So we talk kind of kiwi cups, which is a manual ventouse, or forceps. So what kind of, you know, effect do they have? And also, if you have an episiotomy or any tears, how does that affect your pelvic floor? Sorry, loads of questions. Where do I start?
It's all great. If I just start with the ventouse or the forceps, so like what we'd call an assisted delivery, then it does mean that your pelvic floor is subjected to a bit more stress, I guess, during pregnancy. And in terms of all the research and the stats, it would be more so for a forceps delivery. So I would really, 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 really encourage someone who's had a forceps delivery even more to definitely try and get to a pelvic health physio just for a check if they can, because you are slightly higher risk of prolapse with a forceps delivery. And also during a forceps delivery, there is a higher chance of what we call an avulsion, which is when some of the pelvic floor muscle can actually become detached from the bone. So I don't obviously want to worry anybody or anything like that. And there's loads that can be done to help everything, but it's all about kind of identifying and then knowing what to do to work on it. So I would say if you can just get yourself to have a check, then absolutely do. And then of course, a forceps is nearly always accompanied by an episiotomy. And actually, when we have an episiotomy, it's the equivalent to a second degree tear, which basically means that the skin and the pelvic floor muscles have been cut through. So, you know, it is like a full thickness tear. So it does take about 6 weeks for your body to fully heal and knit this all back together again. And so in that initial 6 weeks, when your body is healing, it's a completely normal mechanism that our bodies will stop us from using the pelvic floor too much. Because if we were using the muscle too much, then it's not going to heal very well. But then I'm sure you must have heard the saying of use it or lose it.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to our muscles. So if we're not using a muscle, then it can get a bit weaker. So, you know, and the same principle applies to a tear. So when our body is healing a tear, then it's very clever that it won't really let you use it very much because it wants it to heal as quickly as possible. But then on the flip side of that is we generally then would be a little bit weaker once it has healed. So it just means that your pelvic floor squeezes would be even more important than normal, and you might have to carry on doing them for a little bit longer, and you might be more likely to experience some leaking or like heaviness or prolapse type symptoms, especially in the early weeks and months. But it can all be recovered from, and I think that's the thing. Like over the years, I've seen just so many ladies, and no matter how bad something might seem or how embarrassing or anything like that, it can always, always be helped.
Yeah.
And so just to reassure, if anyone's listening who does have any of these things going on, then you're absolutely not alone, and definitely, yeah, just reach out to somebody who can help you.
And when that you do go to someone, so I was told yesterday that there is an Oxford scale. That's how you kind of decide how good or bad someone's pelvic floor function is. So, and it's 1 to 5, one being the least, 5 being the best. And I was a 2++. When I said that to you before the call, I wasn't filled with confidence about that. But I'm hoping that I can do some work. And I had an episiotomy and used the Kiwi Cup. So, you know, two of the things you mentioned there that can affect it more. But yeah, I guess, yeah, I need to put the work in, really. And what she was saying was, really, you're trying to get to, you know, it was a long process. Not many people are a five, but you want to be at a 4. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it is a long process. So if you are recovering from an episiotomy, a tear, a vaginal birth, or weakness for other reasons, then it takes on average 3 to 6 months to actually see a difference. So you have to be consistent for that amount of time to be able to actually really make a difference. So yeah, do not give up, basically. You have to just kind of play the long game, and it will be so, so worth it. But yeah, it does definitely take a while. So that's completely normal. So yeah, don't stop doing them. And in terms of then the Oxford grading scale, which we use to help determine where you are in terms of your strength for your pelvic floor muscles, then I would say a 5 out of 5 is definitely achievable. But I guess for everyday function and to not have symptoms, then you want to be looking at least a 4. And just in terms of future-proofing your pelvic floor and keeping it healthy and functioning well, then yeah, you'd be aiming for at least a 4.
There's 2 more things that I want to cover. If you do improve your pelvic floor, what is that going to affect, other than, you know, in general incontinence, etc., thinking about if any of us are lucky enough to have a second baby, if that happens, if we choose to, but, you know, how will it affect the second birth, and is it harder to recover the second time, but also sex, which doesn't necessarily lead to babies in this part of the world. But, you know, we want to be back having sex. Is it going to be better if your pelvic floor is stronger ultimately?
Yes, definitely. So basically all of the sensation during sex and the ability to have an orgasm and the strength of an orgasm is all down to the pelvic floor. So all of those things are basically dependent on the strength and the flexibility of our pelvic floor. So if those two things are good, then our sex life can be really good as well. Sometimes not being able to have an orgasm or the orgasm feeling weaker might be the only reason that people are coming in to see me. So they just want to get their pelvic floor checked and see where they're at and know whether they're doing the right thing. And then, yeah, a few months later, then everything is much better again. Especially if you have had a vaginal birth, like sex for the first few times, at least after having the baby, can definitely be a bit uncomfortable. And even if you've had a C-section, because of the hormones involved with pregnancy and postnatally, it's really normal for us to be naturally a bit drier down below. So our body would make less natural lubrication. Mm-hmm. It's almost like nature's way of saying, what are you doing? Don't do this again. I'm not ready for another potential pregnancy.
Okay, right, I'm with you.
So it kind of tries to put you off having sex. Uh-huh. What obviously not disregarding the fact that you're probably tired and like time poor and everything else.
Yeah.
But just from a natural just from a natural physiological level, our lubrication will be much less, and that can make it feel really uncomfortable and sometimes quite sore. So I definitely would recommend getting a good lubricant and trying to get like an oil-based one or a water-based one, and not really anything that's got jelly in its name or title, just because, yeah, there's much, much better ones that are kind of organic and do the job much better. Mm-hmm. And if you are using a lubricant, then try and get the lubricant inside of you, because if we put the lubricant externally on us or on your partner or on anything else you're using, then it won't get to where it needs to be, and that's on the inside of us. A top tip there. But then one of the second most common reason that sex can be painful after having a birth is if you've got any scar tissue. So something that I recommend to all of my ladies that I see is to do some scar massage. You don't have to do anything special. You don't have to be like qualified or anything at all. But once your scar or your tear or episiotomy has healed, which is normally around that 6 week mark, then just use any kind of plain oil that you might have lying around in the bathroom or the kitchen, put a little bit on your fingertips and then just rub where your scar is. And that can just really, really help reduce any pain and increase the mobility. And that's also a really good one for C-section scars as well. Not necessarily you that you're going to get C-section scar pain with sex, but just on the scar massage note.
And then if you have a, if we did go on, if we wanted to, if we were able to have a second, I guess like it's all the same thing. Is it going to get weaker by the time you have your second? I guess unless you've got it back to a really good place, you might end up being better after your pregnancy because, you know, someone like me who wasn't paying any attention before, now I am paying attention. I guess in theory, my pelvic floor could be better in 6 months' time than it's ever been. So going into another pregnancy, if that were to happen, you know, I would be in a better situation.
Exactly. So if you do nothing, you know, if you don't pay attention to your abdominal muscles or your pelvic floor muscles after your pregnancy, then yeah, if you then have another pregnancy, you're just going to get weaker and weaker. That's the most likely outcome. Mm-hmm. However, like you've said, if you're paying attention, doing what you need to do, then there's no reason why you'll get weaker and weaker because you can recover in between each pregnancy and then you'll be in as good, if not better condition going into the second or the next one as what you would have been before. And that's the good thing with our muscles. They'll do what they're told. You know, if we train them and actually get them stronger, then they'll be stronger. You know, if we do nothing, then they'll get weaker.
Yes.
So really the power is in our hands.
It is. And how do you do that? So I mentioned earlier on, I've got an app, which if I bring that up on my phone now, it's called KPFL. What you can do is set reminders for like as many times a day as you want for slow exercises, quick exercises, how many of them you want, how long you want the slow ones to be, you know, whether it's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, etc. So for me, I was using that quite religiously earlier on in my pregnancy. I've got to be honest, the last few weeks I have been a bit lax, and after my appointment yesterday and definitely after our conversation today, I am going to put this back on. Other things you can get are weight, LV, do a trainer. I've got in front of me here that I was showing you, which I got on prescription. I haven't actually used them yet, but I will put the link in the show notes of a website, Kegel 8, and you can print off the form that asks for this prescription, because my doctor did not know anything about this. And I thought, if I can get them for free, I may as well give them a shot. Not that I've got around to it yet, but it's kind of like a weight with something sticking out of it. If you Google Kegel 8, you'll see they're called vaginal cones. You know, what tricks can you give us? My sister, who's a midwife, she's got this thing where every time she looks at it in the mirror, she does a few. What tips do you tell us that kind of, you know, will make sure we do it?
I think it's just all about trying to build the habit. If you've got good pelvic floor strength, then we should all be doing our squeezes in standing. I, for example, would always do a few when I'm brushing my teeth, because I always brush my teeth standing, and no matter where I am, if I'm on holiday, if I'm at work, if it's a weekday or weekend, I'm always brushing my teeth. So that's just something that has just become a habit for me. But if you've got a new little one, then feeding is quite a good time to do them, because you're generally sitting down. And when your pelvic floor is, when you're working from a weakened position, then it's better to do them either lying or sitting instead of standing, just initially. But because you're obviously going to be feeding a lot in the first few months, that can just be a really good one. Just do like 5 of each every time you feed. But then failing all that, if you're still really bad at remembering, then definitely using some of the apps that are out there. Another really good one is the Squeezy app, which is really good. And that's NHS approved as well. And it's a similar thing to what you were just saying, that you can set your own program and it gives you reminders. And I think it's about £2 or £3 to buy, but it's another really good one. And that actually reminds me, they have a website, so the Squeezy app website, and they have a directory on there of physios in the UK. So if you were looking, or if somebody were looking to try and see a private physio near them, then you can just type in your postcode and it's got loads of, yeah, really good physios on there. So definitely build your habits. Definitely set reminders if you're bad at remembering. And to be honest, I do see a lot of ladies who do have all the gadgets, and the gadgets aren't a bad thing, but just to let you know, they also, to reassure you, you don't have to use them either. The LV, for example, can be really helpful. And that is what we call more of a biofeedback thing. So you insert the device vaginally, you do a squeeze, and then it shows you on the screen on your phone, because it connects to an app via Bluetooth. It basically shows you what you're doing as you're squeezing and letting go, and kind of takes you through the exercise program, really. So it can be quite good because you are getting that instant feedback with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But also you can get the same results without using anything, as long as you're doing your exercises in the right way. It depends really what motivates you. I think for me personally, I just couldn't be doing with the faff of having to like insert something, clean it, and, you know, like do that every day. But that's just me, because, well, that's just me. But everybody is different.
Yeah.
So if it motivates you, then use them. But if you don't have the time, or if it's too expensive or anything like that, then that's fine too, because you don't actually need them to get a really strong pelvic floor again.
Because they're not cheap necessarily. And, you know, if you're forking out for everything else, and that's kind of from the IVF onwards to then baby stuff, and, you know, then, yeah.
Exactly.
But I can totally see the value. It's like getting a personal trainer, isn't it? You know, you could do it yourself, but if you need someone there and you can afford to do it, who will make you do it and you get that instant kind of feedback and support from, then why wouldn't you do that, you know, if that works for you? So just wrapping up a little bit now, can you talk to us a little bit about something that you're part of, which is how I found you, actually, because someone recommended to me the Pelvic Floor Patrol. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the Pelvic Floor Patrol is basically made up of myself and two of my colleagues. I'm the physio arm. And then there's Elizabeth Davies, who is the fit pro, or she works as a personal trainer. And then there's also Amal Hassan, who's a sports and exercise medicine doctor. Basically, the whole point of us being Pelvic Floor Patrol is to really help mums navigate pelvic floor health in a reliable and accessible way.
And it says carry out research and collaborate with government bodies to kind of get this on the agenda, so that women's physio is something that everyone does at some point.
And there has been some movement on that. I know that it is changing, like Public Health England are definitely making movements on getting postnatal physio available to all women. So it is on the change, which is amazing. It's just going to take a little bit of time to fully implement.
Thank you so much, Helen. I really, really appreciate, like, you've just, taught me a lot more than I knew, and just kind of inspired me and make me, you know, even if it's just because I don't want to go into a nursing home, you know, the babies and sex and all the stuff that's happening right now. It's like in years to come, I do not want to be the reason I end up in a nursing home. So I really, really appreciate your chat, and everyone can check you out on your website. Again, I'll put it all of the links. And go and follow you on Instagram, etc. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I hope it's been helpful.
Without question, absolutely. All right then, Helen, thanks so much. Bye bye.